Hi everyone, I'm Rana Sarkar, and you're listening to Confluence. Each week we dive deep into the issue shaping tech, diplomacy, and the economic recovery in disruptive times through the lens of Silicon Valley, Canada, and the world. On today's episode, we're heading home and looking at Canada, specifically its role in defining the future of technology. And it's not just Canadians at home, but also Canadians around the world. Canadian expats are making technology and business decisions that shape our lives. And oftentimes that's informed by the distinct set of practices, mindsets, and dispositions, Canadian values, for lack of a better word. We're sitting down with the C100's Laura Bueller and Chris Albinson to take a deep dive into Canada's tech landscape at home, in the Valley, and around the world. Later, we'll check in with Michelle Zatlin, one of my favorite Canadian success stories, to hear her career trajectory, the successes and struggles along the way. You might have heard of a little company called Cloudflare, which she took from an idea to a juggernaut that's now valued at over $22 billion and is now one of the most ecosystemically important companies at the heart of the global internet. In these stories, we'll see how government, venture capital, and even our university curricula impact the future.
I'm Chris Albinson. I'm founder and managing director of Breakaway Growth.
My name is Laura Bueller. I'm the president and executive director of a San Francisco-based not-for-profit called C100. I'm delighted to be sitting here with one of C100's co-founders, Chris Albinson. Our heart and soul is in Silicon Valley. We'll talk about what that means, I'm sure, on this podcast. But we've got supporters in high places and in entrepreneurial ventures really across Canada, the U.S., and much further afield.
Just given C100's recent shift towards the focus on talent, like, you've seen a lot through the membership of the C100. I wonder if you could say something about that. I mean, we have obviously tens of thousands of Canadians in the Bay Area, and, you know, this number is often disputed.
Well, I always counter that with the number is less important. The impact they're having is way more important. And Canadians have done incredibly well in Silicon Valley. They've had a really tremendous history on shaping the world of technology from the beginning. And so if we go back even to like the age of the nuclear race and then the silicon chip race and then .com, you know, and then now in the new generation of technology, Canadians have pretty much always been at the center of those layers of the onion. And it's really incredible and something we should be proud of, I think, as a nation. The person who wrote the JavaScript, James Gosling, is a Canadian. And that is kind of an elder story of Canada's history in Silicon Valley.
Canada has historically had a rich talent pool that's been integrated into the growth of Silicon Valley for decades. Today, we're seeing many Canadians directly on the front lines, not only with the biggest names in Silicon Valley, but across the global startup ecosystem. And this flow, this circulation, has been accelerating in recent years.
Yes, we have a lot of Canadian talent competing in the big leagues, you know, in technology here in the Bay Area, but also across Canada, across the US, and around the world. The last year, some of the biggest success stories are technology companies that were founded by Canadians. And so I'll use just a couple that will be household names for people listening to the podcast. You know, Uber, one of the two co-founders, is a Canadian, actually, from Calgary, Garrett Camp. Cloudflare, one of their two co-founders, is a Canadian from Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, Michelle Zatlin.
We actually get to talk to Michelle, so you'll hear from her later. Remember that name.
The list actually goes on and on. PagerDuty, we're looking forward to more IPOs, storied IPOs this year of Canadian-founded companies that are really having a just huge impact globally. So the actual number is kind of one thing, but if you look at what Canadians are contributing to the world through the world of technology, it's pretty cool to see the success. I will also just share a couple of other things. So if it's 10,000, if it's 300,000, it's also rumored to be one of the highest density expat communities in the world is the San Francisco Bay Area. Not surprising, you know, Canadians are pursuing really, really incredible careers here. Canadians are values-driven, impact-driven people, and they can have a lot of impact on the world of technology.
Laura thinks now is a great time for Silicon Valley to reckon with itself.
So I think this is a good time to actually call into question the idea of Silicon Valley in general. So for those of you, we're being recorded here. So I'm a millennial here. And so my vision of what Silicon Valley is actually really different than the people who came in and call it the first wave and the second wave, Silicon Valley, even the third wave. So Silicon Valley is a place, but it's also an industry. It's a network. It's a culture. It's an idea. And I think that COVID-19 has just accelerated a trend that's already been happening for the last probably 20 years, which is that Silicon Valley is no longer isolated to that little, you know, radius of geography south of San Francisco. Silicon Valley really is an industry and a network that we all participate in. And I think this actually also follows that theme of real decentralization and democratization of access to the world of technology that's been enabled by the cloud and by all kinds of really underlining software, even stories of Shopify, which comes right out of Ottawa. And what it does is it democratizes access to e-commerce and entrepreneurship for entrepreneurs everywhere around the world. I think that's what's happening to quote unquote Silicon Valley. And so when I talk about Silicon Valley, I almost never think about it as a place. I think about it as this like world that I operate in, which is the kind of network of people doing things in technology. And we live together on Zoom today and in Slack channels and, you know, on Signal and on Clubhouse. And that's really Silicon Valley. And Canadians have a big role to play in it.
I want to dig a little deeper into this idea of the Silicon Valley of the mind, because I mean, I agree with you in the sense that, you know, we've gone from a place where it's been a kind of a geographic determinism. And now we're into a moment where we're certainly distributed. We have these opportunities. But that said, there is something unique about sort of the Valley DNA, which may or may not transport into other geographies. How much of those are porting over to ecosystems like Canada?
You know, people that don't have a five starting their age, Rana, and I'm not calling you out again. Now, remember when Boston was actually the center of the tech universe and this idea of Silicon Valley was in relative tech time, may seems like a long time ago, but you know, relative to industrial change, very short. You know, it was really 1996. And it has a lot to do with, first and foremost, immigration and immigration talent and entrepreneurship and risk-taking around that as the core and the center. Then risk capital kind of surrounding that, and then government supporting that environment in different ways. We shouldn't overlook, to Laura's point, Canada's role over many decades. You know, if you look at the founders of Thai and the India diaspora, that's really a core part of the network in the Valley and connecting back to India, which drove India 2020, which has driven huge amount of economic value. Those were all Canadians that went to Canadian universities and passed through, you know, Elon Musk going to Queens and then coming down and starting all of his companies. And to Laura's point, 30% of tech company IPO value, you know, is traced back to Canadian founders, whether or not they're in the Bay Area or they're back at home, like Dax DaSilva at Lightspeed and Toby and Harley at Shopify. So Canadians have always been very much a part of the flow. We did lose our way, I think it's fair to say, in sort of 2000 to 2008, where risk capital and private risk capital in particular really kind of dried up for some systemic reasons on top of a pretty horrific recession.
But in the last decade, we've seen Canada have a resurgence and establish itself as a real player in the tech landscape.
And I think one of the reasons for that, and one of the things that I'm most excited by, you know, this recent resurgence, is we're doing it very proudly with the maple leaf, maybe oversized on our backpack this time around. You know, before, you know, the Canadians were very quietly leading all of these companies, but almost worked to, fade into the background as Americans or be assumed as Americans. And I think in the global economy, the way it is now, and the Canadian brand is very distinct, it's trusted, not only from a competence and an execution and a results point of view, but also from a team building and a multicultural perspective and an inclusiveness that I think is really critical for companies to be successful globally. And I think that's, you know, it's no mistake. If you do a LinkedIn search on the NASDAQ 100, you're going to find a Canadian, you know, in the C-suite of every single one of those companies, if not leading them.
So what is it about Canada or Canadian identity or Canadian founders that puts us in those C-suites and sets us apart?
I think our foundations, our bones, if you will, are really, really good. We're at a fulcrum point of change where, you know, we can jump into the public policy stuff where I think there's a decision to be made. You know, is innovation a critical part of the Canadian brand and economy going forward? And if so, what does it take to own the podium? And that's the part that wakes me up at night, both passionate, enthusiastic about trying to lean in and help, and worried as hell that we're going to F it up, excuse the language. But we're right at that point in that sort of, you know, never let a crisis go to waste.
That difference in culture was also apparent to Michelle Zatlyn. Coming from Saskatchewan, going to school at McGill, and then moving to the U.S. to go to Harvard Business School, and eventually growing Cloudflare to the $22 billion company it is today. Michelle has experience comparing the Canadian and American approach and spirit, and she thinks there are things that differentiate the two.
As someone who has lived in Canada, probably Canadian, and you know, I grew up in the prairies. I went to McGill, I lived in Toronto. My husband's Canadian. We have lots of experience in Canada. And then now I've been living in the US for about 10 years. So I guess I kind of have that perspective as well is, you know, there's so many cultural things that are similar, but there were a couple of things that were really big differences when I first moved here. And now I've been here for 10 years, you kind of get used to it. And I remember the two things that really stuck out to me when I got to the US is how much more competitive it is here. It is just, and again, this was part of a, like, okay, you thought you were good, but you got to step up your game to even compete here. And so it was really competitive. And so, okay, here we go. And I just was really, people were playing to win. And you kind of decide, you had to decide, were you playing to win or not? Like it felt different. So I would say that was something that felt different. And the second thing that really stuck out to me is how much people like to talk about themselves and self-promote themselves. And I mean, I can tell you in Saskatchewan, that is considered rude. Like that is the opposite of what you do in for sure in Saskatchewan. I don't want to speak for all of Canada because it's all about the community. And again, I'm not an expert and there are definitely historians that can get you all the thing. But as I think back and as I've been more connected to the ecosystem of what's going on, you know, both the tech ecosystem and entrepreneurship back in Canada through the C100, through the work of the Consulate General, or even just going back to Canada, is especially in somewhere like Saskatchewan where like the winters are harsh. And so you got to stick together. Community matters, perseverance matters, and you watch out for each other. You watch out for your neighbors. I think that it's a huge country and its population is growing, but it's a fraction of the population as compared to something like the United States. And so you watch out for each other and that community and, you know, we're in this together. It is different. That spirit is different in the North than it is here in the US that I've experienced. And of course you find your community and, you know, now we have neighbors that watch out for us. Like you find that. But when I first came, there was a lot of what have I done recently? And I just was like, it took me a long time to even talk about what I have done because it was all about we or what we're doing. And a lot of people said, no, Michelle, people want, what have you done? And I'm like, this is so rude. So I've gotten better to find ways to live up to that here without losing who I am. But so maybe there's something in there, I think, Rana, about the community working together. We're better together. We're in this together, watching out for each other.
Chris and Laura think we can look to mayors and governors of U.S. cities and states, like Austin and Miami, for examples.
So I think that the actions of Governor Abbott, the actions of Mayor Suarez in Miami, very interesting to watch if I were a Canadian mayor right now, just to see, wow, look at how well they're trying to attract that talent and those job creators, not just jobs, but trying to attract job creators to those ecosystems. Very interesting to watch. And I think that entrepreneurs are following them and they will continue to do so if they feel like they can operate in a place that's fundamentally wants them to succeed. You know, despite all of the right ingredients for success, we should be honest about the fact that there are still some barriers to what a lot of Canadian founders face in Canada. I spoke with one person recently who leads global HR for a series of technology companies in the US and has been in the room for what they call site selection, which is, of course, where you decide where you're going to put your next office. Okay, is it going to be in Atlanta, or is it going to be in Dallas, or is it going to be in Austin? This executive said to me, you know, I think in 20 years of these conversations, I don't think a Canadian city has been on that list even once. Which is kind of surprising to those of us who know the more recent stories of Toronto creating, you know, 80,000 tech jobs in the last 5 years, mostly driven by these, you know, foreign companies putting up really meaningful investments up there. But the point is still well taken that how many companies, if there's not a Canadian executive in the room, are saying, you know, I heard that actually Montreal is the center for, you know, for this particular technology, and we should really consider opening an office there or seeking some partnerships there. How easy does it seem to them to do that? If they think about, oh, it's a cross-border thing, and then we have to think about incorporating a new country, you know, all this stuff is really doable, but how aggressively are we marketing it? I would say that probably not quite aggressively enough, because until it's a household name, until it's like, we all know the word Bangalore and Hyderabad and Tel Aviv here. We know the name Boston and Austin and Seattle here. We know the name Shenzhen in Silicon Valley. Until people here are really fluently talking about, you know, the nuances of picking, you know, Vancouver versus Montreal versus Toronto for an office, I think we probably haven't done enough marketing of what the benefits are of building in Canada. What I hear a lot of entrepreneurs talk about is that they want to feel supported by their ecosystem. And that means that kind of early stage and later stage access to venture capital, angel investments, all the way up to growth. This is a consistent complaint that I hear from entrepreneurs everywhere. And I know I'm speaking against what the venture capital industry would like me to say. And I'm sure there's really good exceptions to this rule. But overwhelmingly, I still hear from people that they get way better deals, better terms, and higher valuations from their investor counterparts in the US versus local investors in Canada. That's a problem, right? It makes them feel like not that supported by their local ecosystem. I think similarly, you know, even if you look at San Francisco and the tech lash that is happening here, there are entrepreneurs who are rightfully kind of scared about like, so what am I going to be like demonized if my company is successful? You know, we're definitely going to drive up real estate prices in the neighborhood we operate in, and we're going to drive up the price of talent in the ecosystem that we're operating in. And so they want to be in an ecosystem that's really supportive to them.
But I want to talk about the generational aspects, because I mean, I think that, you know, within our lifetimes, and Chris, you've, you know, nicely outed me as an oldie, and I, you know, I'll take that. But what I'll say is that, you know, we've seen at least three different iterations of, you know, this back and forth between Silicon Valley, you know, just in our working lifetimes. I mean, and now we're into this other extraordinary moment where, as Laura nicely put, the idea that you can grow your company across different borders. You could actually, you know, be no headquartered. You could be, and they see things very differently. They don't necessarily buy into a lot of the old political economic sort of concerns that a lot of Canadians used to have about, you know, are you American? Are you Canadian? Is this a brain drain or is this a brain gain? There's a different feel that we're seeing with a lot of those companies.
I do think that people of my generation that do think differently, but then the Gen Z generation that's coming up from behind. I mean, so just for context, at C100, we work with a cohort of exquisite early stage Canadian entrepreneurs every year and support them by just giving them access to our credible network of mentors. And a lot of them now, not all of them, a lot of them are Gen Z. And that means that they are the TikTok generation. They communicate completely differently. They don't use email. They don't use Facebook. They come from a really different place. And so I think that the idea of networks and access and technology are just integrated in our lives in different ways.
So what can we take from this Gen Z TikTok generation? Are they changing the Valley and tech ecosystem? And how can we support that future?
So I think the first thing to note is that the demographics of every generation are different. And one of the coolest things I think about this next generation that's starting to build companies is that they are the most hyphenated generation yet in Canada, when I say hyphenated is I think something like 30% of them come from at least, you know, one parent who is born in a third country. They are Canadian, but they are even more likely to study abroad or work abroad for a time period. Maybe they themselves have even lived abroad or were born somewhere else. And so in our kind of up and coming membership, we see a lot of people who are actually born in completely different countries, you know, went to college or university in Canada. And that's then the maple leaf that they carry with them for the rest of their lives. And they might be working down in Silicon Valley. And yet their identity, which is very hyphenated, has Canadian in that identity. So that's the one, I think, really cool thing. That means that this is a multilingual generation. This is a generation with ties in all kinds of other markets around the world. And yes, their Canadian identity and their sense of being Canadian is probably just a little bit different than the people that were kind of growing up in Kingston from many generations of Kingstonians, for example. The other thing is that I think COVID-19 and this pandemic is having a a bigger impact on people who are at the beginning of their careers than those of us who've been in the workforce for a while. And the companies being started this year are remote by default. And so anybody who's part of like an entrepreneur Slack channel or, you know, Facebook group or thread, you can see that all of these companies are being created completely digital first by default. And that opens up the aperture of the talent that they can attract. You see Canadian entrepreneurs based out of Victoria hiring developers in the Ukraine and in Taiwan. And their marketing team is sitting in Los Angeles. And, you know, and this is the world that we live in today. I think time will tell, of course, post-COVID, what actually happens to those trends if people do end up kind of consolidating around nodes of influence and kind of office nodes. But I do think there's something about this next generation that's super comfortable with that. Certainly when I speak to some of our, you know, more senior members of the venture capital community, I am hearing things like, oh, well, good luck, you know, later, like it's not going to really be like that forever. And you have to be here, you know, and I just fundamentally think that the up and coming generation just doesn't believe that's true anymore.
How much of Silicon Valley is a geographic location is an artifact of the past? Is it actually necessary for companies to physically be here?
Part of this, right, is there's a bigger trend of Silicon Valley decreasing in its relative importance to the rest of the world in terms of access to venture capital and access to customer markets and access to talent. Of course, you know, I'll be the first to say that it is still, I think, the most important market in the world. And it actually, if you look at investment numbers of Silicon Valley versus even rest of US, I think it's one order of magnitude bigger than the next largest ecosystem still. But it doesn't change the fact that across the United States, there is not a single state that does not have $1 billion tech company headquartered in that state. And so there is really what we're seeing is, I think, a longer term trend of the rise of the rest, right? This decentralization. And that becomes something that people in Canada can participate in really easily too, because they, you know, you don't have to be here to start companies. But it is still like, I like to say, it's still like where New York Fashion Week is always going to be in New York, right? And Milan Fashion Week is always going to be in Milan. But of course, you don't have to be located there to start a fashion company anymore. I think the same thing for a lot of the technology industry in general is that, yeah, the conferences are still going to be in Silicon Valley for a long time. And, you know, most of the venture capital is going to be here for a really long time. It's just where the industry is. But people are not needing to headquarter their company here and hire here. And I think that's going to be especially true for this next generation starting companies.
I asked Chris what he sees happening in the venture capital space in the Valley, and if that's informing how startups think of where to scale and headquarter their companies.
It's actually really interesting. You know, history doesn't exactly repeat, but it does rhyme. And the same problems that Boston had in the 90s, you know, are really, you know, hitting, you know, the Bay Area pretty hard, to the point where the best talent on the planet is thinking very hard, to Laura's earlier point, about where it makes sense. Part of that's driven by the structural things that used to make the Valley the Valley. Like, why do we call it Silicon Valley? Because you needed to be close to chip designers and fabs and things like that, you know, industrial infrastructure, which when software eats the world, you don't have to be anymore. I mean, when Verafin exits to NASDAQ for $2.7 billion from St. John's in Newfoundland, I'm sorry, like, we need to stop having this silly conversation about, you know, location is dispositive to success. You know, when I met with Toby and Harley in Ottawa a decade ago, and they said, like, you know, all these US VCs are saying to do Shopify, we have to leave. And it's impossible to do a $1 billion, you know, company from Ottawa. I said, well, you know, on its face, we know that's not true, because Terry's built, you know, 3 businesses to $1 billion in revenue in Ottawa. You can absolutely have success there. And actually, it's easier to do that now than it ever was. And the idea that venture capital is, you know, a leading indicator, I actually think all the data says the opposite. It's a lagging indicator. The same way the venture firms uprooted themselves from their very comfortable, you know, Boston homes and moved to the West Coast, you know, talent is the most important thing. And I think this is where Canada really shines. If you're an entrepreneur who really has global aspirations to build something really amazing on the planet, where better than Canada to go build it, where you can recruit from anywhere in the world, bring the best talent and have access to the biggest markets and have great success. I think there were some structural things that we had going back in the mid-2000s around access to venture capital, but they're no longer issues. And I think total $5.6 billion has been invested in Canadian founders that have come through the C100 doors in one way or another. A lot of the foundational issues have been solved. We're really at a focal point in 2021. You know, does Canada happy to host the Olympics every 4 years, or do we want to win the gold medals? And that is the difference, I think, as we sit here in 2021. It's not about brain drain. It's not about access to venture capital. It's not whether or not you can build multi-billion dollar companies, because we have Lightspeed and we have Verafin and we have Shopify and Cloudflare and PagerDuty and Uber and Slack. You know, we can go down the list. Question is, does Canada want to be the next Silicon Valley?
What are the barriers right now for us to be doing that?
It starts first and foremost with people. And so I think Canada's done a really good job with its skills-based initiative on immigration. And the numbers kind of speak for itself. I think there were more tech jobs created in Canada over the last 4 years, and in particular in Toronto, than the rest of North America combined. So the ability to go recruit talent generically for tech into Canada, I think there's a big window for it. I think it's going to be a little bit harder, frankly, in the Biden administration. That's going to be more open to immigration than the U.S. was under the previous administration. But I still think the brand of Canada is really strong.
Remember, Chris told us that VCs in the Valley were almost forcing people to have their companies be 100% operated out of the Valley. But we don't see the same thing happening from VCs in Canada.
And the cool thing for Canada is because the foundations are there. Take Instacart, for example. Why is that company not headquartered in Toronto? The founders are from Toronto. The company is the third largest grocer in North America right now. Just no one's asked. No one's picked up the phone and said, hey, what's it going to take for you guys to not be half in Canada and half in the Valley, but all the way in Canada? And that's not to say that you have to do that. But if you go back to the success of tech clusters, going back all the way to your original question, what is it about the density of, right? It's the density of entrepreneurs that take enough risks to build enough value that you can fail 90% of the time. And so we're close to having enough of that already organically on the ground in Canada. It just needs to be augmented a little bit. And in the don't let a crisis go to waste, you know, 2021 is the window where I think you could go from hosting the Olympics to winning all the gold medals. It's there. And I think it's first and foremost about talent.
I actually think this is a big part of the picture. And talent in general is something that Canadian headquartered technology companies do struggle with. But I want to say that is a struggle for every technology company in the world, not just in Canada. But there are some skill sets that are particularly difficult for them to recruit for. If you're, you know, building a multi-billion dollar tech company out of Edmonton, there's just only so many people in your local ecosystem who have the experience scaling and leading to, you know, scale up your sales team, for example, doing enterprise sales. And so I think there are some real unique challenges, and with the expectation of how fast companies are supposed to grow in the technology industry. But Canada has everything it needs to get that right. But I do want to mention an anecdote about Salt Lake City, which I think really speaks to the power that a university can have to transform whole ecosystem. And we talk a lot about Waterloo in the tech world in Canada because it's an absolute gold standard. It's one of the most important universities and institutes of higher education globally in technology. But I don't think the rest of Canada is at the Waterloo level yet. And so sometimes, like, just take it out of the Canadian context completely. So Salt Lake City is much overlooked in most of these conversations about Silicon Valley when we're talking about this in Canada. This started a few decades ago at the University of Utah, when they went to Los Angeles and Silicon Valley and said, what's it going to take for you to hire our grads to put an office here? And they said, we need developers, we need computer scientists. And so they created the computer science department at the University of Utah and got that all important first kind of client to come set up an office.
That push to create the computer science department at the University of Utah was started by David Evans. Notable students from that program went on to found companies like Silicon Graphics, WordPerfect, Ancestry.com, Novell, and Pixar.
But of course, the rest is history. And now in a state that until recently basically had no homegrown venture capital, has grown something like 10 multi-billion dollar tech companies in the last 5 years alone. They have almost 7,000 technology companies based there 40,000 grads in computer science alone out of the state every single year. And it's third now in VC activity per capita nationwide, third after California and Boston. The emphasis on university talent cannot be overstated.
So universities play a huge part in bringing in talent and building the tech ecosystem. But how does that thirst for scale manifest itself in Canadian universities?
There is a difference in culture that it does feel sometimes like no single one of them is trying to win and like create the 5,000 extra computer engineering seats in their university every year. That once, because we have this wonderful equitable education system, a lot of those, you know, when you get a department or a new initiative or a new course approved, it's got to then go to every single other university in the province, and they're all competing for the same funding. And by the end, it kind of ends up being this like diluted kind of initiative that you might have a few extra seats or an extra course here and there or a certificate program. But the mindset shift that Chris is talking about, which is fundamentally different than these, like, okay, it's not about removing red tape. It's not about just trying to increase the number of computer science, you know, graduates. It's a fundamental mindset shift to, do we want to be the best at this? And that's sort of what it takes, right? Is this idea that we're going to do whatever it takes to become the place where innovation and entrepreneurship come to play. And so I sometimes like to like talk about the Salt Lake City story because I think it's inspiring. And if you drive down the highway there, you see it looks just like driving down the 101 in Silicon Valley. There's like big tech company after big tech company. By the way, some of them founded by Canadians as well. And it's an ecosystem that looks a lot like what I think several cities and towns across Canada can and should look like in the future.
Michelle agrees, and she thinks that Canadians right now have the opportunity to create the landscape they want to be a part of.
Really interesting what's happened last year is there's been a huge flattening out of where people are living, where you choose to, you know, potentially start your company. And I actually think that's a big opportunity for Canada, right? Canada's already, there's been a huge change in the tech growth there, which is great. And we've had so many success stories of with Lightspeed and Shopify and then a whole other group of private companies like Wealthsimple who are following suit, which is great. And we need more. And so if you're, again, if you're an entrepreneur who's Canadian, find the problem and solve it. And you can absolutely be based in Canada, do it and build a global company from there. And I think that's wonderful. And as you said, there's a lot of problems to be solved. And so if you love this idea of pro-human tech, because again, I love a world that sounds more human, right? Like that sounds good to me. Why wait for somebody else to do it? You can do it. And I, again, I think the Canadian education system is amazing. The Canadians around the world want to help and give back in other ways. I think that there's a lot more money that you can raise now as a Canadian entrepreneur. That like that problem has mostly been solved. It was a big problem 15 years ago. It's not now because of some good regulation changes. And so be the person who creates it and build the next big thing, which I, again, I'm very optimistic for the future.
Chris thinks that in addition to a change in mindset, there needs to be a change in intent.
It's all about intent and mindset, right? You know, whether or not it was Ona Berry as chief scientist for Israel, when she took on that role in the early 90s, you know, and created Startup Nation, it wasn't that Israel was preordained to be entrepreneurial and tech forward and savvy. Like there was an intent to go downfield and block and get the things out of the way for the entrepreneurs to be successful. You look at Modi's, you know, India 2020 plan, you know, lots of issues, you know, in India, but you can't not look back on the last 20 years and just marvel at the amount of innovation and the connectivity, you know, between the Bay Area and India and the benefits, you know, frankly, to the Indian economy and Indian people for what's been created. So I think 100% it's more than possible. It's tantalizingly close. The brass ring is just there to be taken. I think the big missing thing is for collectively Canada to decide, just as they did on the Vancouver Games, with the same focus and the same aspiration to own the podium or not. And if it does, I'm 100% convinced that within 10 years or less, Canada will be on top of the podium in tech. And I say that through the lens of a global, you know, the global question. I think, again, this battle between the U.S. and China isn't going away anytime soon. And I think Canada is positioned really well, you know, for another 150 Shopify's to be headquartered in Canada serving global markets. I don't see any barriers to Canada's success other than us deciding to be successful.
Thank you for listening to Confluence. We hope you were able to walk away from today's episode with some new perspectives. The circulation of Canadians around the world is truly incredible. Here in Silicon Valley, expats like Lauren, Chris, and Michelle are working in very specific ways and at scale to shape our future. In a culture that was once known for moving fast and breaking things, they're part of a movement to do things differently. And in my view, their leadership is emblematic of Canadian values and entrepreneurship. If you want to learn more about the world of responsible innovation, humane technology, and ethical development, we've included some resources in the show notes. Confluence is produced by the Consulate General of Canada in San Francisco in collaboration with Edit Audio. Special thanks to Wade Wallerstein, Kate Walter, Yves Beaulieu, Steph Colburn, Sophie Shin, and Ali Sirwa.